A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He was scrolling X, came across an account called Citizen X. Bio reads, helping thousands of high net worth individuals acquire an alternative citizenship. Diversify your passport portfolio. He clicked through, found what amounts to an e-commerce site for passports, prices in fiat and crypto, and his reaction was basically, "This seems kind of sketchy. Why are people doing this?"
I love that his instinct was, "This seems sketchy," and then immediately, "Explain it to me." That's the right order of operations.
It's the healthy response to seeing the words passport and portfolio smashed together like someone dropped a Scrabble board. But here's the thing. Citizen X isn't some dark web operation. It's a fully above-board venture-backed platform that raised $30 million in funding. You can browse citizenship options the way you'd browse ETFs. Dominica, $100,000 donation minimum. Malta, 690,000 euros. Payment accepted in Bitcoin, Ethereum, or wire transfer.
The global citizenship by investment market, CBI for short, hit an estimated $25 billion annually as of 2025. That's not a niche. That's an industry roughly the size of the global recorded music business.
Which is wild because most people have never heard the phrase passport portfolio and would assume it's a punchline, not a financial planning category.
And the reason it's grown this fast, I mean, we're talking over 100,000 individuals now holding investment-linked citizenships, comes down to three things converging. Geopolitical instability is the obvious one. If you're wealthy and your home country looks shaky, you want an escape route that doesn't depend on visa applications that might get denied. Second, remote work normalized the idea that you don't need to physically live where your income is generated or taxed. And third, and this is the part people don't talk about enough, inequality has created a class of people with enough wealth to treat citizenship as a purchase, and enough anxiety to actually make the purchase.
The why now is basically, the world feels unstable, your laptop lets you work from anywhere, and if you've got six or seven figures sitting around, a second passport starts looking less like an extravagance and more like insurance.
And Citizen X is the logical endpoint of that logic. They've turned it into a marketplace with transparent pricing, a menu of options, and a shopping cart. It's the Amazonification of something that used to require a private banker in Geneva and a lot of whispered conversations.
Which brings us back to Daniel's question. He's looking at this and thinking, who are these people? What are they actually buying? And is it as sketchy as it looks?
The answer to that last one is yes and no, in ways that are genuinely fascinating. Some of these programs have due diligence that would make a three-letter agency blush. Others basically ask for a wire transfer and a pulse.
We're going to walk through the whole thing. What drives someone to spend six figures on a passport from a country they've never visited? How the brokerage model changed the game? Where the due diligence falls apart? And what this does to the countries selling citizenship like it's a commodity export?
I think the deeper question underneath Daniel's prompt, he didn't say it explicitly, but I can feel it, is what does it mean when citizenship has a price tag? Not legally, not technically, but philosophically. What happens to the idea of belonging to a country when you can buy your way in?
That's the part that's going to keep me up at night. But before we get existential, let's actually define what we're talking about, because there's a distinction that matters a lot, and most coverage gets it wrong.
The distinction that actually matters here is citizenship by investment versus residency by investment. They get conflated constantly, but they're fundamentally different products. CBI, citizenship by investment, means you write a check or buy real estate or government bonds, and in return you get a passport, usually within 3 to 6 months. You never have to set foot in the country.
Which is the part that makes it feel like ordering a passport off a menu. You literally don't need to visit.
Residency by investment, the so-called golden visa, is a different animal. You invest, you get the right to live in the country, and after 5 to 10 years of actual physical residency, you can apply for citizenship. Portugal, Spain, Greece, those are golden visa countries. You're buying a path, not the destination. CBI skips the line entirely.
Golden visa is move here and eventually you're one of us. CBI is here's your passport, enjoy. We'll send you a postcard.
And CBI is what Citizen X is brokering. The programs they list, Dominica, St. Kitts, Antigua, Malta, Vanuatu, those are full citizenship grants. You're not a resident. You're a citizen, with all the rights that entails, the moment the paperwork clears.
Which raises the question of how this even became a thing countries do. It's not ancient history. Kitts and Nevis launched the first modern program in 1984.
The origin story is actually pretty straightforward. Kitts gained independence from Britain in 1983. They had a tiny economy built on sugar, no real industrial base, and they needed foreign exchange. So they said, what if we sell passports? Dominica followed in 1993, then Antigua, Grenada, St. Malta entered in 2014 with the first EU program, which really escalated things. Now you could buy access to the entire Schengen zone.
The Caribbean program started as economic development for microstates, and then Malta turned it into a premium product.
And the brokerage model, Citizen X, Latitude, Henley & Partners, that's the more recent twist. Historically, if you wanted a second passport, you found a lawyer in the target country, navigated opaque fee structures, and hoped you weren't getting scammed. These platforms aggregate the programs, publish transparent pricing, handle the paperwork, and charge a success fee, typically 5-10% of the investment. Citizen X is just the most consumer-facing version of it. They've got a website that looks like your comparison shopping laptops.
You can pay in crypto, which is its own whole thing we'll get to. But first, who's actually buying these? Daniel's question was basically, who wakes up and thinks, I need to diversify my passport portfolio today?
Over 100,000 people have done exactly that. The largest buyer demographics are wealthy individuals from China, Russia, and the Middle East, and the profile varies. You've got the Chinese tech entrepreneur whose passport only gets them visa-free access to about 40 countries. A St. Kitts passport opens 150+. You've got the Russian business owner who wants an escape hatch from sanctions and banking restrictions. You've got the Middle Eastern investor who wants geopolitical insurance in a volatile region.
It's not. And this is the misconception that drives me nuts. It's not primarily criminals. The caricature is Bond villains buying passports in cash. The reality is mostly people with legitimate wealth who live in countries with weak passports or unstable politics, and they're hedging.
That's the thing Daniel's instinct picked up on. It feels sketchy because the whole concept of shopping for citizenship feels wrong. But the programs themselves, at least the well-run ones, are legal, regulated, and have been around for 40 years. The sketchiness isn't in the existence of CBI, it's in the execution.
Let's get into the mechanics, because this is where the sketchiness Daniel sensed either gets confirmed or gets complicated. Why would someone pay $100,000 plus for a passport from a country they've never visited? There are basically three reasons, and they're all rational.
First is geopolitical insurance. If you're wealthy in a country where the political situation could turn, and I'm not talking hypotheticals, I'm talking about people who've watched neighbors lose everything overnight. A second passport is an escape route. It's not a plan to leave tomorrow. It's a plan to have the option. You keep it in a drawer, and if things go south, you're not standing in an embassy line hoping someone processes your visa application before the borders close.
Which is exactly what happened in Hong Kong after the national security law. Applications for Caribbean CBI programs from Hong Kong residents spiked something like 400% in the year after. People weren't fleeing. They were buying insurance.
Second driver is tax optimization. Most CBI countries have no wealth tax, no inheritance tax, and no capital gains tax. Kitts, Antigua. They're not taxing your global income. So, if you're facing a 45% top marginal rate at home, restructuring your tax residency through a second citizenship can save millions over a lifetime. It's legal tax avoidance, not evasion. But it's absolutely a driver.
Third is the one that's most tangible day-to-day, visa-free travel. A Chinese passport gets you into about 40 countries without a visa. Kitts passport gets you into over 150, including the Schengen zone and the UK. If you're a Chinese tech entrepreneur trying to do business globally, that's not a luxury. It's a competitive disadvantage to need a visa for every meeting in Europe.
Take the case of a Chinese founder who buys a Vanuatu passport for $130,000. Vanuatu's program is one of the fastest, approval in as little as 30 days. They're not trying to live in Port Vila. They're buying the ability to get on a plane to Berlin tomorrow without a 6-week visa process. And, simultaneously, they're hedging against political risk at home. One purchase, two problems solved.
Then there's the Russian oligarch case, the one that gives everyone heartburn. Before Cyprus suspended its CBI program in 2020, you could invest 2 million euros in real estate and get an EU passport. That meant access to EU banking, travel, and property rights. After 2014 sanctions, this became the favored route for wealthy Russians who needed to keep money moving through European financial systems.
The Pegasus scandal in 2023 is where the sketchiness goes from theoretical to documented. Investigative journalists found that sanctioned Russian oligarchs obtained Dominica passports after the 2022 invasion of Ukraine. These were people on international sanctions lists, and Dominica's vetting process either missed them or didn't look hard enough.
Which brings us to how these programs actually work operationally, because the gap between Malta and Dominica is enormous. Malta uses multiple international agencies for background checks. Interpol, financial history reviews, Frontex involvement. They reject about 25% of applicants. Dominica and some of the smaller Caribbean programs rely on a single local firm. The investment structures vary too. You've got the donation route, where you just give the government $100,000, non-refundable. Or you can buy government bonds, or invest in approved real estate projects.
Citizen X sits in the middle of all this as a broker. They aggregate the programs, publish the prices, handle the paperwork, and charge 5 to 10% of the investment as a success fee. The crypto payment option they offer. That's where the anti-money laundering questions get loud. If you're paying for a passport in Bitcoin, the source of funds trail gets murky fast.
The answer to Daniel's question, is it sketchy, depends entirely on which program and which broker. Malta's program is about as rigorous as any immigration process in the world. Vanuatu's program has been called a cash for passport scheme by the EU Parliament. Same industry, completely different standards.
The individual buyer is only half the story. The real weirdness is what this does to the countries selling these passports, and to the countries losing their wealthiest citizens.
Because for every person buying a second passport, there's a home country watching their tax base walk out the door. India's the clearest example. Wealthy Indians are the largest group of CBI applicants globally, and India doesn't allow dual citizenship. They've got this overseas citizen scheme that gives you, basically, a fancy visa. No voting rights, no political participation. So, these are people who are wealthy enough to buy a second passport, but not wealthy enough or willing enough to fully renounce their Indian citizenship. They're hedging in a legal gray zone.
That's brain drain in its purest financial form. These aren't people physically immigrating. They're still living in Mumbai or Bangalore, running businesses, employing people. But their tax residency shifts. Their capital moves. The social contract phrase, because the people who benefit most from India's infrastructure and stability are structuring their affairs so they don't have to pay for it.
Which is the quiet tragedy of CBI. It's not just individuals gaming the system. It's a slow erosion of the idea that citizenship means contributing to the place you actually live.
Now flip it around and look at the host countries, because their side of the equation is just as strange. Dominica derives over 25% of its GDP from citizenship by investment. A quarter of the entire economy, from selling passports to people who will never set foot on the island.
That's not a revenue stream. That's an addiction.
It creates exactly the perverse incentive you'd expect. If a quarter of your GDP depends on attracting passport buyers, you have a powerful reason to make the application process as smooth as possible. Smooth means fast. Fast means less due diligence. The race to the bottom isn't theoretical, it's documented. Kitsch relies on a single local firm for vetting applicants. Malta, by contrast, uses multiple international agencies including Frontex, Interpol, and independent financial auditors. The rejection rate at Malta is around 25%. At some Caribbean programs, it's functionally zero.
You've got this bifurcated market. The premium tier, Malta, formerly Cyprus, does actual vetting and charges accordingly. The budget tier, and I hate that budget tier, is a phrase that applies to citizenship, processes, applications, like a DMV with better marketing.
The EU noticed. In 2024, the European Commission pressured Malta to tighten its program significantly. Bulgaria suspended its CBI scheme entirely. The EU is moving toward harmonized rules that would effectively ban golden passports within the bloc, not because the programs are illegal, but because they undermine the entire premise of EU citizenship.
The 2025 numbers tell the story. The EU granted only 0.3% of CBI applications from Caribbean programs. That's not a rejection rate. That's a statement. They're saying, we don't trust your vetting, and we're not letting your new citizens through our doors.
This is where it gets philosophical. Because what Citizen X and Latitude and Henley and Partners are doing, they're not just brokering transactions. They're normalizing the idea that citizenship is a market good, something you shop for, something with a price tag and a comparison chart and a success fee.
It reframed citizenship, this thing that's supposed to be about belonging, about a social contract, about mutual obligation, as just another asset class, right alongside your stocks and your real estate and your crypto holdings.
The question that sits underneath all of this is, what happens to the social contract when passports are traded like assets? Citizenship has always had an element of transaction to it. Birthright, naturalization, marriage. But those are slow, bounded, tethered to actual human connection to a place. CBI untethers it completely. You don't need to speak the language, visit the country, or know anything about its history. You just need the money.
That's the part that's going to stick with me. We've built this global system where mobility is increasingly stratified. The wealthy buy freedom of movement, and everyone else is stuck with whatever passport they were born with. Citizen X didn't create that inequality, but they sure made it easier to browse.
Where does that leave someone like Daniel? Curious, maybe a little horrified, but also wondering what the non-sketchy version of this looks like. Because not everyone browsing Citizen X is a sanctioned oligarch. Some people just want to know what their options are.
The practical answer is, if you're actually interested in a second citizenship, don't start with CBI. Start with residency by investment. Golden visas in Portugal or Spain are the sensible on-ramp. Portugal's program requires a 500,000 euro investment in approved funds. You need to spend about 7 days a year there, and after 5 years you can apply for citizenship. Spain's path is 10 years, but the investment thresholds are similar.
Crucially, those programs don't carry the ethical baggage. You're actually expected to show up, learn something about the country, contribute to the local economy. It's still a transaction, let's not pretend otherwise. But it's a transaction with a relationship attached. You're buying a path, not a product.
The price difference matters too. Portugal's golden visa starts around 250,000 euros for cultural heritage investments, which is real money, but not 690,000 euros for Malta. And you get a real path to EU citizenship at the end, not a passport from a country you couldn't find on a map.
Now, if someone does look at a CBI program, and I'm not recommending it, but people will, there are red flags that separate the legitimate operations from the ones that should make you nervous. First, crypto payments without enhanced due diligence. Citizen X accepting Bitcoin isn't inherently shady, but if the broker isn't requiring the same source of funds documentation for crypto as they do for wire transfers, that's a problem.
Second red flag, any broker who promises guaranteed approval. No legitimate program guarantees anything before the background check is complete. If Malta rejects a quarter of applicants, anyone claiming a 100% success rate is either lying about their numbers or steering clients toward programs that don't actually vet anyone.
Third, and this is the one that doesn't get enough attention, the physical presence requirement, or rather the lack of one. Programs that grant citizenship without you ever setting foot in the country are what critics call mailbox citizenships. You get a passport in the mail, and the country gets your money. There's no relationship, no integration, no accountability. If a program advertises zero residency requirement as a feature rather than a bug, that tells you something about what's being sold.
The thing is, mailbox citizenships are exactly what most CBI programs are selling. That's the product. It's not a bug in the system. It is the system. The entire value proposition of a saintcy. KITS or Dominica Passport is that you don't have to go there. You pay, you get the document, you use it at airport immigration in Frankfurt.
Which brings us to the bigger lesson underneath all of this. The passport portfolio trend isn't just a quirky financial product for rich people, it's a symptom of a world where mobility is increasingly stratified by wealth. The right to move freely, something most of us take for granted if we're born with a strong passport, has become a luxury good.
If you were born in Germany or Japan or Canada, your passport gets you into 180 plus countries without a visa. You probably never think about it. If you were born in Afghanistan or Syria or Iraq, your passport gets you into maybe 30 countries, and good luck getting a visa for the rest. The wealthy from those countries aren't buying second passports because they want a fun collectible. They're buying what you and I got for free at birth.
That's the part that should make everyone uncomfortable. We're not talking about yachts or private jets, status symbols that have always been about wealth. We're talking about freedom of movement, which is supposed to be a fundamental right. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights says everyone has the right to leave any country, including their own. It doesn't say anything about the right to enter another one. That gap between the right to leave and the right to arrive is what the CBI industry monetizes.
Citizen X is just the most visible expression of something much deeper. They didn't create the inequality in global mobility. They just built a really clean user interface for navigating it. And that interface is what Daniel stumbled on and immediately thought, this feels wrong. His instinct was right, not because the transactions are illegal, but because the whole thing makes visible a truth we usually prefer not to look at directly.
If that's where we are now, the question that follows naturally is, where does this go next? Because the commodification of citizenship isn't slowing down. If anything, the pressures that created the CBI market are intensifying.
Climate change is the one I keep coming back to. We're looking at projections of hundreds of millions of people displaced by rising sea levels, agricultural collapse, extreme weather, and the people who can afford to buy their way out are already doing it. The question is whether we'll see something even more explicit. Climate passports, refugee investment programs, some formal mechanism where mobility is priced directly against environmental risk.
It sounds dystopian, but the logic is already in place. If you can buy a passport today as insurance against political instability, buying one as insurance against climate instability is the same transaction with a different trigger. The Maldives is literally sinking, and they've talked about buying land in Australia to relocate their entire population. What happens when that conversation shifts from nations to individuals? When the wealthy from coastal cities start buying citizenship in landlocked countries with stable climates?
The uncomfortable answer is, it's probably already happening, just not labeled that way yet. The same Chinese or Middle Eastern investors buying Caribbean passports today might be factoring in climate risk alongside political risk. The portfolio metaphor Citizen X uses, diversify your passport portfolio, works for climate the same way it works for geopolitics. Don't put all your citizenships in one flood zone.
Which means the Citizen X marketplace is more than just a brokerage. It's a mirror. It shows us, in the most literal way possible, that citizenship has a price. Not in some abstract philosophical sense, in actual dollars and cents, displayed on a website with a drop-down menu and a crypto payment option.
The question Daniel's prompt really leaves us with isn't whether this is legal or illegal, sketchy or legitimate. It's whether we're comfortable living in a world where that mirror exists. Where the thing that's supposed to bind us to a place and a people and a set of mutual obligations is just something you shop for.
I'm not sure I am comfortable with it, honestly. But I'm also not sure my discomfort changes anything. The market exists. It's growing. The forces driving it, inequality, instability, climate change, those aren't reversing. If anything, Citizen X is just the early, clunky version of something that's going to get much more sophisticated.
The early adopter phase of citizenship as a service. I'm sure that ends well.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The word libration, referring to the moon's apparent wobble as seen from Earth, shares its Latin root with libra, the scales. In the 1960s, Soviet scientists studying lunar libration from the Yamal Peninsula discovered that the effect allows observers to see roughly 59% of the moon's surface over time, rather than the 50% you'd expect from a perfectly locked orbit. The extra 9% is the moon showing us its edges.
The moon, wobbling at us from space. Somehow that feels right.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com.
I'm Corn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. We'll be here next time, probably still thinking about people buying passports like they're ordering pizza.
Which sleuths invented, by the way.
Sure we did.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.